on that. We have to kind of just roll with the punches, you know, whatever happens will happen. And we have to be as nimble as possible, but hopefully, I mean, we hope and pray we don't get shut down again, because that would be a very hard thing for a lot of businesses to come back from if that happened. So.
Yes, it would, of course. Well, I wish you all the best on evermore.com yes. for more information and for tickets as well. And Ken Brett Schneider, I so much appreciate your time, this insight into the park and into your world. I look forward to making a trip. Now, tell me real quickly before we wrap up, how far from, say, Salt Lake Airport?
So the drive is about a 45-minute drive south on I-15. So you come straight down the freeway. It's about a 45-minute drive. Some people stay up in Salt Lake if they come and visit, and some people just stay. We have hotels like right across from the park.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Ken. I do need to sign off. Thank you so much again for your time. I look forward to meeting you someday as well.
That's great.
Thank you for listening to Times Like Now. Past episodes can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Trevor Collins. I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thank you for original music, J. Cody Robertson. And I do look forward to speaking with you all next time.
You're listening to Community Radio, KBOO, Portland.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Marianne Nicholson. She's an artist and a member of the Zaudena First Nation, which is on the middle part of mainland coast of British Columbia. And she's here to talk about A Feast of Light and Shadows, which is her artwork on Now through August 29th at the Yale Union at 800 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Marianne.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
So this is a wonderful piece. I hope everyone can get in to see it before August 29th. I saw it on a beautiful, hot, sunny afternoon. So the Yale Union, you know, was a laundry building 100 years ago, and you go upstairs and there's this huge empty room with a wooden floor, and along one side are 22 windows, and then there are tall rectangles with an arch section above, and then there are eight more on the north side. And what Marianne, you've done is put a kind of film over the glass to make it sort of greenish blue, and then in white outline, you've created all these, you know, Zaudena artwork shapes that we all kind of know from the Pacific Northwest art, these faces and birds. But you've also introduced other characters like, you know, there's a crown, a maple leaf. There's more contemporary pictures in there. Briefly tell us, what does A Feast of Light and Shadows refer to?
Yeah, A Feast of Light and Shadows basically refers to a particular economy that we practiced on the coast traditionally as Indigenous people. I wanted to reflect on this economy of feasting, where there's this notion of sharing, and there's also a very strong notion of relationship to that which is being shared. So sustenance and food, etc., etc. So our traditions came out of a very different economic position from the one that we find ourselves being immersed in today, which is basically a form of neoliberal capitalism. And the form of the gallery, in terms of how the blue-green film covers the glass, gives the impression that the room has been flooded, that the waters have risen, and there's a relationship with the light. As it comes through the windows, it casts the shadows of those images onto the floor of the gallery. And across from where the shadows start to cross the floor, move across the floor in this dynamic way as the sun moves, is a setup of enamel bowls. There's 50 enamel bowls. And that those bowls refer to what we call today potlatch. And potlatch is a Chinook jargon word, but that's the word that we use to describe this, the redistribution of wealth amongst Indigenous peoples on the coast. They would give away. It was an incredibly important part of the potlatch system was to give away. And the giveaway recognizes the relationship between peoples. And then we have a large photographic mural of an ancestor of mine whose name was Jim Hamzeed. And he's standing beside a feast dish of his. That feast dish came out of my community in Kinkam Inlet. And we know that the face for that feast dish is at the Museum of Anthropology at UBC, but we don't know where the body went. But that type of feast dish was very, very important to our traditions, and it was a strong symbol of our traditional economy. So I wanted to look at how the modern economy, the imposition of neoliberal capitalism on our peoples, is affecting us in a way that it is affecting our relationship to our lands and also globally, because globally, neoliberal capitalism has also created a situation where we're looking at global catastrophe and the rise of water levels. So I wanted to deal with this notion of flooding, pending catastrophe, but I also wanted to look and present this idea of an alternative economy, because there are alternative economies, particularly amongst Indigenous peoples, that do exist that could possibly remedy or find solutions for the position that we find ourselves within globally. So a Feast of Light and Shadows is actually a performance, and it's a performance done with the internally within the gallery, but it invites the light of the sun. The participants or the guests to the Feast of Light and Shadows are actually the shadows that come across the floor.
The shadows were, the light on the floor has this greenish tint, and then the shadows are created by this white, I think it's tape you've used to make the marks. So just tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting relationship kind of between materiality, physicality, the physicality of the building, the physicality of the windows and the glass, and the physicality of the vinyl, which is applied to the windows, which blocks the light to create the shadows on the floor, and the ephemeral quality of the shadows themselves. And so when one is experiencing, there's this juxtaposition between the power of the physicality of that space and the power of the ephemeral, which is created by the movement of the sun and the shadows across the floor. And that's on purpose, because in principle, amongst the Dao De Nang, and I would venture to say, you know, many of the coastal First Nations, our relationship to the world is a very spiritual one. So there is this physical relationship that we have with the land and with our communities, but it's very much contained within a spiritual understanding and a very much considered under sacred conditions. And that really frames our economies differently. So when we compare our traditional economies to modern economies, what we find is that the modern economies are deeply entrenched in the physicality of the world and do not, or they fail to take into account in equal measure the spiritual side of the physical things that we are dealing with. So you have this kind of massive production and extraction happening. And for us, we were those types of things that at that level of extraction or objectification within our traditional ways of thinking, we could not engage at the same level that we find the modern economy does because of that balance of the sacred with the physical. And so that's what's happening in that space.
That's exactly how I experienced it. I basically came at it with a kind of, you know, Western European mindset. And all I really looked at was the glass and the tape and the view and what was in front of me and the light and shadows on the floor. I thought, oh, well, that's a nice sort of secondary effect. I didn't, you know, obviously didn't appreciate the work the way it was intended. And what's it like on a cloudy day?
Well, this is what's interesting. So when we look at our relationship to nature, it's often very much, we're not necessarily the ones in control of that. So there's an ebb and a flow, there's a presence and an absence. But that was something that we would be very attuned to. Whereas I find the opposite happens within a modern worldview, colonial worldview, where there's such a focus on the physicality of things, that the subtleties of relationship and time, presence and absence, are not things that are considered in the same way. And to me, it's very intriguing because at the end of the day, where have we ended up because of that? You know, so I would say colonial peoples came and they considered that our relationship to the trees as a kind of a quaint, insubstantial relationship. So before we would take a tree down to use that material, we would pray and have ceremony and recognize that that tree had life just as we have life, and we would be very ceremonial about recognizing that. Well, none of that comes into play that has been exercised in British Columbia since colonization. Colonial peoples came over, they saw the trees as resources, they started mass deforestation, and now we find ourselves in the position of the precariousness of humankind based on that focus on physicality and usage over spirituality.
So the structure of the imagery on the wall, there are the 22 windows that face west. You stand there and the middle six of them represent one face of a box. So it's a bentwood box, which you explained it is a sort of cedar wood box that's been bent with steam. And it's a storage, could be storage for anything. In like, it could be a coffin, or it could be food storage, it could be ritual, you know, sacred objects. So you've got this one facet of a box, and then the rest of the box is two other sides of the box are kind of folded out on left and right. There are all these characters that are floating around, say, on the glass. Is there a narrative to the story, you know, a left-right narrative that we look for? What are the actual creatures doing?
There's an interesting juxtaposition between this work and the artwork of my community in the Portland Art Museum. So in the Portland Art Museum is a giant Tsunukwah feast dish. It's similar to the one that's pictured on the opposite wall in the gallery. And people would be very familiar with this if they ever go to Portland Art Museum. It's one of the significant works within that institution.
What's the name of the guy in the photo, Jim?
Jim Humzeed. His name's Jim Humzeed.
You have this blown up huge photo of your ancestor, Jim Hunzi, and he's standing next to what it looks like a huge head with pursed lips. The belly is kind of open and there are knees, and that's part of a dish, right? That would be used in a potlatch.
Yes. So it shows the animation of all things. And so the feast dishes are animated as living beings. And in this case, this feast dish is animated into something that we call a Tsunukwah. Sometimes they translate that as like woman of the woods. This very same Tsunukwah personage is, there's a feast dish that's very similar that's in the Portland Art Museum, except that the dish, the Tsunukwah is lying on its back. Where in the photograph with Jim Humzi, this large Tsunukwah feast dish is actually sitting up. So nearby, in the Portland Art Museum, you will find one of these bentwood boxes, a bentwood chest, and we call that gildas, a box of treasures. And what's happening in the gallery is that I've depicted the chest. So the first six the interior six panels of that long 22-foot window wall shows the face of the box, and on the very ends you'll find the sides of the box. So the box has been blown apart in this kind of catastrophic way, because I'm using the box as a metaphor for the world. And what you find within the kind of this chaos of characters in between these panels of the box that have been kind of blown apart is you'll find different animals and creatures representing the different regions of the globe. And then within those, you will find specific ones that refer to specific countries. And those countries I've depicted in particular around the G7 nations, or the major nations whose economies are actually the ones who are contributing the most to global warming. So it's as if the sea has come, a flood has come, and it has blown apart the box, and everything has become scattered within that. There's still some structure there, but there's all this chaos, and all these characters which represent the different nations of the world are all in this kind of catastrophic interrelationship with one another. And that's what's happening within the imagery on the wall.
Yeah, so you can see bears, turtles, wolves. I think is that an octopus in there? The thing with little circles?
There's many, many, many images in there, yes.
The listeners, if you think of Keith Haring, the way all the imagery is kind of cartoon-like, but pushed together and in a kind of roiling chaos, that's how this looks. And so this, you're sort of depicting a flooded world.
Yes, and it's interesting. There is a relationship there to the site specificity of Portland, because those images are based on like pictographs. They're meant to visually, they're visually referential to pictographs. And in the case of, I had gone down to Portland to go see the Dalles Dam, because that site was one of the richest indigenous sites in North America. It was one of, it was so significant because it was just covered in pictographs. And when the Dalles Dam was built, it was, that location was flooded. And when that happened, those pictographs were submerged underwater. And there's a tragedy there that is happening because of the blindness of capitalism and neoliberalism and the economy, that actually, like, we as indigenous peoples are basically being told that we're supposed to join. And that means for us that we have to give up this other way, this other worldview that we have. And yet for me, having grown up with that, I keep thinking, but the answers to our survival exist within our traditional ways and being, not in this assimilation into the modern economies, because the modern economy is actually globally destructive. And you see that example with the value system that was applied when the Dalles Dam was built, and this site of indigenous significance was submerged underwater. It was not valued. What those images represented, the histories and the depth of knowledge, it was not valued. What was valued was the electricity that the dam was going to provide. I'm looking at this history, and I'm looking at the history of indigenous ways of being and colonial ways of being. And I'm saying we are heading to catastrophe. We are heading into catastrophe. And I can't even emphasize that enough, because here in British Columbia, we had the highest recorded heat ever within the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Where I was living, it hit 44 degrees. It's unprecedented. And we keep saying that this is unprecedented. This is unprecedented. And what's going to come with that? The forest fires. So we live in the land. We see what's happening in the land. It's terrifying. The reality of that is terrifying. And what are we being told? We're being told to join the modern economy, make money, and with the money, we will solve our problems. How is the money going to bring back the forests? How is the money that we're going to profit from exploiting our lands going to bring back our fish, our food? How is it going to prevent the rise of waters and the global catastrophe that will come with that? You know, so this work is really questioning all of that. It shows this chaotic kind of catastrophe that is upon us, but at the same time, it has a beautiful presence and poignancy about it, because it says there is an alternative, but we have to be open to what that alternative is. We have to pay attention to the shadows on the blue. We have to open our minds to the ephemeral over the physical. This is what the work is attempting to do. And it actually invites the audience in as guests to participate in, consider an Indigenous worldview and what that actually means beyond assimilation.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Marianne Nicholson. She's an artist and member of the Zaudena First Nation. And she's talking about her installation, A Feast of Light and Shadows, which is on now at Yale Union through August 29th. Marianne, just say a bit about this exploded box and how you have a view through the glass to downtown Portland, you know, the sort of a view over the central industrial east side, then to downtown. What, explain the concept of space that you want people to experience.
I want people to feel within that space that they're implicated in the space. They're actually a part of this, the performativity of the space. You know, it's not a space to come and just look at something and consume it. When you enter that space, you become a part of what that space is. You know, the view from within the space, outside of the space, into downtown Portland, and we know that the ocean lies, you know, beyond that horizon. It's the recognition that the body, one's own body as a viewer within that space, is implicated in all of this. It looks outside of the gallery to the city and to the landscape in a way that asks you to look at things differently, to recognize one's implication within it, and to ask oneself, you know, what is it possible, you know, what is it possible to do? Because we're all agents in this narrative. We're not passive, we're not helpless. What can we do to change that? And in Portland in particular, Portland has been a very active place of social engagement, and I recognize that. My hope is that Portlanders will engage with this work and feel welcome within that space and to think about these things.
Are you living in Kinkem Inlet?
I'm from there. That's my home community. I'm here right now. I'm here right now working, carving a feast dish as part of a community project. Yes,
because that's on the coast, on, you know, the British Columbia. Is the sea level rising there?
Well, what we're experiencing is we're experiencing massive change. It's happening very, very rapidly. We see it. We live in the land and we live on the waters, and we see these changes happening, and we can't keep up with what's happening. There are things happening that we see that are, it makes us wonder, you know, what, why is this going on? And one of the things that did happen to us in 2010 was that we experienced massive flooding. We experienced a flood so high that our entire community was evacuated by helicopter. At that moment, that was the moment I knew that we were more or less on the forefront, because we live in the land. And sure enough, now we see other communities, you know, there's going to be flooding, there's going to be fires, there's going to be scarcity. These are the things that are coming. But there, I don't want to be completely unhopeful about it. I know there are answers within Indigenous worldview. We have to uphold those worldviews, take them seriously, and look for those answers to change our global economies.
You have a piece in the new Canadian Embassy in Paris, and where you're using a similar technique. You have imagery on glass. Is there any relationship between these two works?
Yes, there is, because that work was done in reference to the Paris Climate Agreement. So that work has all of, it has symbols, I believe there's 193 images which each image represents one of the nations that signed on to the climate agreement. It refers to this agreement that was made that has possibility, but also has the possibility of failure, extreme failure, right? So it was looking at the climate agreement and saying, is this enough? Is this enough to truly change the trajectory that we're on? And unfortunately, we can see, as hopeful as that agreement was, I think it's called The Turbulent Waters. That's what the title of that work is, it's The Turbulent Waters. So you can see the relationship between that work at the Canadian Embassy in Paris, which is where the agreement was signed, right? And the work in Portland, Oregon, in terms of looking at global catastrophe, but also global cooperation. And that's the economic part that I'm talking about when it comes to feasting, because there's a focus on cooperation and distribution that exists within Indigenous frameworks that is not the same within contemporary modern economies based on more or less like massive amounts of wealth being accumulated by very few people while the rest of the world suffers without.
Do you see your work as sort of parallel to like a demonstration in the street, like a, you know, the kids who protest climate change, indifference, you know, where does your kind of activism work? Where does your art work as activism?
I think it is similar. You know, the ones who are in the streets protesting, they're expressing something. They're expressing discontent. They recognize something's wrong. They're trying to say something, and it's the same thing I feel in my artwork. That's my form of expression, to try and say there's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. But I'm trying to reach people. Like, to me, the audience is just as important. Like, it's only complete when there's an audience to bear witness to it or to experience it. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation. I'm trying to have a conversation with an audience in the same way that the demonstrations in the street, you know, they're there because they're trying to express ideas, and that they are hopeful will be listened to. And that is the same with the artworks. I'm hoping that people experience the artwork and that there's a conversation that is developed out of that experience. And hopefully that leads to at least some type of engagement towards change.
That's beautifully put. So, Marianne, in the last minute or so, is there anything else you want to say?
Yes, I just wanted to mention the smaller images. There are some smaller images that are mounted on the wall within the piece, and those show photographs of our practice. So, you know, you see one of the potlatches from, say, 100 years ago that was being put on in Alert Bay. And I do believe that there, within one of those images, you actually see the feast dish that was collected from our territories and brought to Portland, Oregon, that now exists in Portland, Oregon. You see that. And to me, that represents this kind of trajectory of extraction that has happened from Indigenous communities to institutions, institutional extraction. And so I'm also pointing that out, you know, that as part of this broader economy, there has been this extractive process for Indigenous peoples. And it's something that we should be thinking about, because this is happening culturally as well as economically.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Marianne Nicholson. She's an artist and a member of the Zaudena First Nation on the coast of Canada in British Columbia. And she was talking about a feast of light and shadows, which is on now at the Yale Union on 800 Southeast 10th through August 29th. Thanks so much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Marianne.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, moan, my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all. Thank you.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 20 de julio del 2020.